Leo Vegas her. Hos os kan du altid slippe din indre løve fri og få mere spænding i hverdagen. Leo Vegas Sport & Casino. Spænding her og nu. 18 plus. Spil ansvarligt.
Aldrig AFK lever af dine donationer. På tier.dk kan du støtte med lige præcis det beløb, du har lyst til, og hvis du gør det, så er du motherfucking nice. Hvis du har lyst til at se mere til mig, så er jeg live på twitch.tv/sjovenils et par gange om ugen. Der er allerede en del lyttere, der kigger med, og alle andre er mega meget velkomne. Du kan finde min streaming schedule på min egen Facebook-page, der bare hedder Niels Forsberg, og nu tilbage til underholdningen.
It's like I'm truly sorry I can't bring you into the podcast under the normal circumstances where we sit in a professional radio studio with a fantastic coffee machine. Like I have guests who mainly want to be invited back for the podcast just for the coffee.
Well, that sounds nice. I look forward to it in the future sometime, maybe.
If you happen upon Copenhagen, the suburbs of Copenhagen, you are very, very welcome. I'm sure we could keep talking, basically.
Nice.
All right. I've actually already pushed the button to get this thing rolling. Very, very welcome to Never AFK, a podcast about gaming in quarantine still, but with extraordinarily good company here in the online studio, I guess. Very, very welcome. Peter from Dreadlands.
Hi.
This is my, like... Peter Nilsson, creative director from the new indie. We can call you indie, right?
Yeah, we can call me us indie. Sure.
How big is your?
We're quite small. We're five people, four full time and one intern.
So behind the upcoming smash hit that will soon be available all across the world, Dreadlands.
Yes.
And now, before we get way too much into this, Peter, I would just like to tell all the listeners what a patient and helpful man you are. You see, this isn't my first rodeo in being a complete idiot and fucking up a recording. I think I have the most wonderful guests. They're so patient and they're so sweet. This is our second shot at doing this thing.
Yes, it is. But I'm glad to be back. It's just fun.
Well, it's good. That's good, because I had a lot of fun talking with you. So I hope we'll have a lot of fun trying to repeat ourselves word by word. But thank you so much for being back and being patient with me. And thank you so much, my dear listeners, for being patient and nice in this time of need. Now, Peter, Dreadlands. Before speaking with you, I thought like, okay, I'm going to get some first-hand impression of this thing. And I saw some, a couple of YouTube, you know, playthrough, test-throughs. You're in beta now?
We're in early access right now.
Early access.
All right. Yes, so it's we're on Steam, so it's possible to buy the game and support us and try out the game before the final release.
Cool.
And kind of help us with the feedback and all that nice stuff.
Yeah, because that's the thing when you release the early, and when you're an indie developer with 4.5 people full time, I imagine that the value of a community to just punch hours of playthrough through must be completely through the roof for you guys.
Yeah, it's very extremely valuable. Also, we have it's such a big game, so we really need to have lots of different kinds of systems that we want to try out, and it's really, really helpful to have a big community helping us out and giving feedback and testing and trying out what works and what doesn't work. And also when you're in early access, you have a little bit more freedom to try new stuff, to see what works and what doesn't work. And things that doesn't work, you can go back to kind of scrap them and go back to square one and try something else instead, which you really can't really do when you can do it in release, but it's not
kosher.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to do it. But in early access, everyone is more on board with we're trying different stuff and see what works and what people enjoy and what people don't enjoy.
Really helpful. If we start from the complete scratch, we're talking about a turn-based tactical shooter fighter XCOM style.
Yeah, so we're very inspired by XCOM and games similar. We talked a lot about that in our last talk, if I remember.
Yeah, we're gonna do it all over again. So I'm terribly sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no worries. But what kind of sets Dreadlands apart from the usual turn-based game is our online components. So we have a shared world which the players share with each other. So you're meeting other players while you're out traveling in the Dreadlands. You can either decide to partner up and do co-op missions together, or you can challenge them to PvP matches and stuff.
Because let's start from the biggest thing on my mind when I saw this the first time was, you know, XCOM and maybe the first XCOM invented this game mechanic of Overwatch and turn-based and cover system with the first one. It's of course not the only game that that uses this game mechanic, but it's like the game that defined it. Or the game that whenever you think about this game mechanic, you kind of mention Dreadlands. Well, you're gonna, but you kind of mention XCOM, you know?
Yeah, and it's also it's a lot easier to explain what the game is by saying it's like XCOM, rather than saying it's a turn-based skirmish game where you control a small gang. If you say it's an XCOM-inspired game, then everyone kind of knows what they're getting into right from the start.
Yeah.
So it's really a genre-defying game, XCOM, I would say.
But it's you also challenge the conventions of the genre with adding a lot of extra layers, and we're going to get very much into that. But before, can we just talk a little about how do you, as a game developer, how do you approach employing a game mechanic that is so iconic, I guess?
Yeah.
Like you know when you make a game like this that you will be compared, like by proxy, to a very, very successful and rightfully so franchise.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about like in the early beginnings of game development? What went through your mind choosing this, I guess?
Yeah, so playing a lot of XCOM, both the original XCOM and then the Firaxis new ones, there have been a lot of inspiration for Dreadlands. Mm-hmm. But we also kind of started from a tabletop background with Dreadlands. So we wanted to make more of an online tabletop turn-based game. So we're trying to kind of feel from both inspirations what works and what doesn't work. And we have tried and retried many things that didn't work and things that worked better.
So what were some of that's interesting. What were some of the things you tried that didn't work?
Yeah, so when we started out the first kind of iteration of Dreadlands, when it still didn't have a proper name or anything, it was very much more tabletop game-ish, so to speak. So everything was more like simulating dice rolls, making it much more random, which you expect in a tabletop game. If you play a Warhammer game or Blood Bowl or anything similar, you have your to hit roll, you have to damage roll, you have a chance of a crit, and you have a you get hit, you get an injury roll, and so on, so on. So it's a lot of randomness that goes into there. And we, our first iteration, we did the same thing. We did when you hit, you did like random damage based on what weapon you had, and you had a crit chance. You could double your damage, and you could. And if you manage to injure someone, they have to roll on the injury chart to see what kind of injury, and then they died, and so on, so on.
And why did you, like, that sounds like a game people would play. That sounds plausible. Why did you go away from this approach?
Yeah, that was our, like, initial way of doing things. But what we found out during a lot of play tests is that the players feel it's fun when it goes your way, but it feels really, really unfair. if the AI does have a lucky streak and it hits you in an improbable shot and it damages you and it does a crit and you have to roll an injury and you roll a bad roll and your guy dies. And that's it. And it's really, really harsh. And
it's like we've all been there in XCOM, right?
Yeah.
Like where you're just fucking, no, not that guy. How can you fucking, you're kidding me. He had a 10% hit chance. Okay, he's in cover and shit. Oh, that's my guy.
Yeah, that's really, really, really harsh. And what our first iteration with a lot more randomness made for even more of these really, really weird situations, which you couldn't predict. Like the AI got a really, really lucky hit, and you get a really bad roll on the injury, and so on and so on.
And so how did you solve this? Do you reduce the AI's chance of getting a lucky hit? Do you remove some of the worst case scenarios?
We have done a little bit of both. So the first thing we did was reduce all randomness. So we still have a random to hit chance when you're trying to hit, but all like damage and crits and injuries and all those things are not random anymore. So you have a fixed set of damage. Each weapon has a fixed set of damage, and the crits are if you crit, it's based on your previous actions. So we have like an inspiration system. So if you manage to do two hits in a row, you get inspired, and then your next hit will be a critical hit.
Okay. Yeah.
But what it does is also that it shows the other players, because it's important when you play PvP that you know all the information. So when when an enemy gets inspired and you know his next hit is going to be critical, his kind of like nameplate starts glowing and stuff, so you can see that he's about to.
So you don't feel so you don't feel unfairly treated.
Yeah, so you know we kind of signal beforehand that this guy is going to do a critical hit, so you better get out of his way. And what it also opens up for is that you can counter act on this. So if he's inspired, you can shoot him. If you manage to hit him, then he loses his inspiration. So you can also counteract the critical hit chance that was just pure randomness before. So it adds another layer of like strategic thinking to the game, which is really nice. And also you kind of show the information to the players so they don't feel cheated when they get the critical hit on them.
And then you told me something amazing that I want you to tell me once again while hopefully the recording button is fucking on. Was that XCOM and most other games who have like a random to hit chance had to reduce the randomness of the random to hit chance.
Yeah.
When you have like a, because people when you have a 74% hit chance in XCOM, you expect to hit. So that is actually a bigger.
Yeah. So what XCOM does at the normal difficulty levels is that they kind of pad the hit chance. So if they show you have a 75% hit chance, you actually maybe have a 85 or 90% hit chance, because that's kind of what people expect in their minds. So that's one thing to do. The other thing they do is also that if you have a 75% hit chance and you miss and you shoot again and you have 75% hit chance and you miss again, which can very much happen when it's pure randomness, but players don't accept it. They feel like if I have a 75% hit chance, I should hit 3 out of 4 shots.
Yeah.
That's it. That's how you think. That's how you kind of process the information. So what they did to kind of make that happen is, like, if you miss a shot, you add on an extra layer of hit chance on top of it. So if you miss a 75 shot, the next shot is actually 90%, but they show it's like a 75. And the third shot is 100% because people expect it to, or the fourth shot is 100%. Because that's how people think about randomness.
So it's like the human mind can't really comprehend true randomness. So no, they have to unrandom the randomness in order for it to feel random?
Yeah, because people expect something, especially when you have if you have a 50% hit chance or lower, people don't have any expectations because they know it's a higher probability that they will miss. So then they're fine with missing like 10 shots in a row, even if they have a 25% hit chance. Mm-hmm. But if you have a higher chance of 50% hitting, you kind of in your mind expect to hit more than you miss. And if that doesn't happen, players feel like the game is broken.
Yeah.
And this goes the other way around as well. So if the AI hits 10% shot, if they hit in once, players feel cheated. But if they hit in 2 or 3 times in a row with a 10% shot, the game is broken.
Yeah, and
I don't want to play this.
Which could happen in true randomness.
Yes, because there's no randomness doesn't have any history. It doesn't know what the previous role was. There's no connection.
Yeah. And
so every role is unique, so to speak.
But in our minds, because the human mind is so geared towards making connections.
Yeah, we really want
to. Into systems and.
Exactly. We really want to analyze and really kind of think, oh, he missed, or he hit two attempts. He can't hit a third. It's impossible.
That's so.
So you have to, like, kind of make
it's
up
like
rules.
Funny, strange, not funny, haha, but it's still really funny.
Yeah.
So have you done this with Dreadlands?
We tried a couple of different approaches. There's some, I mentioned the XCOM thing, which they did. Mm-hmm. We also tried some, you can also have like, if you imagine a deck of cards, so when you do a shot, you kind of pull out the card and that card is gone, so you can't get the result until you reshuffle the deck.
Mm.
It's also a way to not make weird results happen in a row, so to speak. So we tried a couple of different things. We haven't really decided on how to make a really, really balanced and proper one. We haven't. It's really, really hard because you want to. Especially when you have a PvP game, you also want to communicate this to the players in a good way, so it's not hidden behind the curtain, so to speak. Yeah. So we're still trying out some different.
Well, speaking of the PvP, maybe this is now where we open. So we've been through, like, you love board games, you love the XCOM series, but how does this game differ then? Because, like, when you make I think you've made some excellent and very, very exciting choices here in order to separate yourself from just being an XCOM clone.
Yeah.
So first of all, I guess the multiplayer.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. We really want to. I played a lot of MMOs in my days, and I'm kind of like MMO damaged in my brain. So I have a hard time to play single player games when there's no other players around me. Even if I don't interact with them, I still want to have players around me to see, like, what they have accomplished, and I can show off what awesome rifle I have right now, and those kind of things. So I think that's really a big part of the, like, player experience. And I think it's a really new take on the turn-based genre, because they're traditionally very single player focused and, like, story driven. And we're trying something new there.
Yeah, I'm a guy that really likes the single player, story driven. Can you play Dreadlands just single player all the way through, not even having to worry about the internet, because that's the problem. So, other people, they're people.
So from when we launched in early access, we had only the online mode, so you could only play online with other players. But you could ignore them. You could play like the story if you wanted to, just ignoring other players. But there was a lot of players that still really felt they wanted like an offline mode, not see other players at all, just being in the world alone and kind of play it more like a single player game. So I think we added that in after 2 weeks of, or something in early access. We added like an offline mode, so you can play it completely like alone. Not meeting anyone else. So it's really up to you. We really want the players to have the options they want. If they want to play offline, that's fine. You can play.
I guess that's a way of catering to a bigger crowd.
Yeah, I mean, we want to... We're such a... How do you say? Like a... I don't know which word to use really, but we really want the players to enjoy the game the way they want to play it. We want to offer it both PvP and PvE experiences.
Yeah.
Because to be honest, we're not really sure how the players will react to the shared world and turn-based, since it's traditionally a lot more single player, focused genre. So we want to keep like an open mind and see what players enjoy the most. If it turns out that like the PvP skyrockets once we right now you can only play PvP for like fun, but we're adding in seasons and rankings and that stuff later on. So if that really takes off, and that's
we're looking at the new esport here.
I would
love that, man.
That would be really awesome if you can pull that off. So we're looking at a lot of like similar turn-based online games, and those that are the biggest success stories of the turn-based online game is not really the XCOM kind of games. It's more the card games like Hearthstone and such. And they really managed to pull off the like turn-based combat, but making it like interesting and fun to watch. So we looked a lot on those kinds of games as well.
Yep, because you've also included in Dreadlands a deck building card system, which is like so you're taking the XCOM base mechanic that everybody knows and loves, and then making it your own. XCOM and cards.
What we wanted to do is have a games system to make the turn-based combat not feel so predictable and passive, so to speak. So especially for the PvP, you don't want to have like two teams sitting at the each end of the map and just like overwatching and waiting.
I've never played PvP XCOM, but that would be like, okay, full sniper team, just
and just wait for the others to walk into your perfect trap.
So we
tried the that's what we added the like tactic, we call them tactic cards, and just so you can like really change the flow of combat. So for example,
and
if
like
you have
the in-game mechanic, like the lore-wise mechanic, is different tactics being employed by these gangs.
Right now we have two different gang factions, and we're adding a third for release. But we're trying to keep the tactics like in their kind of what do you say?
Spirit.
In their vibe. Lore. So like the nature faction, they can deploy totems and stuff. So if you have the enemy gang really hunkering down in some covers and just overwatching, you can put down like an explosive totem in the middle of them, which will explode the next turn. So they really have to get out of there just to really make sure you can change the flow of combat, and you have to kind of adapt to what the other guy, your opponent, is playing for kind of tactic cards.
So can you see your opponent's tactics cards?
No, you can't.
Ah.
So they're secret. But we are now I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but we're planning on a fourth faction, which is going to be much more sneaky, stealthy, and one of their unique skills is they're going to be able to see one or more tactics cards of their opponents. So that's I think that's going to be really, really interesting.
Because they're sneaky stealthy. That makes a lot of
sense. Yeah, exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. So enough about the mechanics. What's the lore of the game? What's the story, the plot, if you will?
Yeah, so Dreadlands is it's after like a third world war, which tore the world apart. And the civilization is slowly kind of rising back up, but it's really like post-apo setting, gangs, rivals, small societies, but very, very primitive still.
I'm getting a very, when I watch the videos, I'm getting a very Fallout-y vibe.
Yeah, it's kind of the same like base premise, the world has gone to shits and you're trying to rebuild. What kind of makes it unique is the Dreadlands area, which the game takes place in. It's a they discovered a resource called Glow, which kind of has this almost magical abilities or properties, which makes it very, very
valuable
and sought after. But it also kind of mutates the land. So Dreadlands is really split into different zones, each zone having really unique look and feel because it's been really, really mutated beyond recognition by this really, really strange substance, which everyone is after. And that's why you and your gang has arrived at the Dreadlands. You kind of, if you compare it to like the gold rush of San Francisco and all those.
And the Wordstone Rush of Mordheim.
Yeah, exactly. That's also a really good liking, so to speak. So yeah, so that's why everyone has come to Dreadlands and trying to establish a base and start gathering glow and selling to the bigger companies. To get rich and famous. Yeah.
I like that you called it glow instead of blow. That would have just been too fucking obvious. Now, it looks amazing. Like I would have never guessed that it was such a small team working on this. Looking at the playthroughs here, talk to me a little bit about more of the people working for you. Are you all like, because you seem like such a crew of board game geeks.
Yeah, we very much enjoy playing board games and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So we're four people working full time. I'm the creative director and I'm also the programmer. We have one animator / producer. He's and also / level designer. He's doing a little bit of everything. And then we have a 3D artist doing models and environments. And then we also have a 2D artist that's doing all the UI and concepts and stuff. And we're also having some help from a couple of other guys, more former colleagues of mine who's been
hanging out.
Doing some game writing and concept and stuff. Yeah, so we're a small but really close together team.
You must be like, so you're both the creative director and a programmer.
Yeah, so that's a nice combination.
That must be such a sweet combo.
Like, it's really, really nice. Yeah.
Because I would imagine in bigger companies where like being a creative director and a programmer is two very, like, what can you say, separate skill sets?
Yeah, very much so.
And I would assume that sometimes things could get, lost in translation, I guess?
Yeah, very much. So, I mean, it's a really blessing, or it's really good to be the creative director and programmer. But having said that, we're such a small team, we're kind of talking about every decision together before we make any major changes and stuff. Yeah. But it's also kind of a blessing in disguise because
you gotta do a fuck ton of work.
that part too. But I mean, if we have like two really good ideas and we're kind of trying to decide which ones to go with, I kind of know which one will be the fastest to implement code wise. So we can do ID one, which takes a week. We could do ID two, which takes a month. And then we go like, yeah, we do that with the, and I say, let's do the one that takes a week because it only takes a week. But that doesn't mean it's the best idea. I guess I
see that in comedy. Like when someone goes, oh, let's say Donald Trump says something dumb, right?
Yeah.
And you want to do some comedy about that. Imagine with your imagination that Donald Trump said something dumb. Well, what can you do about that? You can make a stand-up joke.
Mm-hmm.
You can make maybe a funny music video. You could do an online sketch. You could do a write a sketch for some of the. Do you have that in Sweden? Revue.
Yeah. Like
right.
A comedy show kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. So all of them is still. Let's say it's the same basic joke. Right.
Mm.
A joke based around the premise of, let's say, I've had some jokes about the fact that he once said, "I'm so humble, you can't even begin to imagine how humble I am." Right, which is a joke in of itself. But writing a stand-up joke about it means I have to see that in a newspaper on my way to the comedy club, and I'll just rip out the page of the newspaper and write a little note, and 10 minutes later I'm on stage with the joke about Donald Trump. Right? If I want to make a music video, well, first I got to find some music, someone to make that for me. I have to make the music for myself. I have to write the thing, and then I have to tape record the thing, and then that has to be mixed in order for it to sound, make my shitty voice sound nice. And then after all of that, I have to find someone to who can film and edit the fucking video thing. And then I have to find gather all my friends and like the. So the basically what I'm trying to say is the same output for a recipient requires such a different amount of production.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the same with game developing?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, Yeah, exactly. It kind of depends how far you want to take the, if you have an idea of a new tactic or skill or something, you can always take them how far you want to take them, how well made do you want to do it.
And how much that interferes with the rest of the code, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you had two tactics which are really, really similar, but some one of them touches all the other game systems, may have to do like really ugly code hacks to just make it work. And the other one is just more clean. It's more self-sufficient. It can just exist on its own.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I really like that option a lot more.
Is there
especially now that we kind of have a live game, so any changes in like the core code can potentially cause a lot of bugs, and we don't really have the QA resources to test everything the way we would want it to test it. So it's we really kind of want to only do that if we must.
So how has the reception been now that you've released it into early access?
Yeah, it's been really great. We have a really nice score on Steam and positive reviews, and we have a really, really nice Discord community going on with lots of active players. So I'm feeling really good. We could always sell more games, of course, but I mean, we're still aiming for like the big release later this year. And that's going to be like when we have a finished product to release. It's going to be really, really awesome.
I'm very much looking forward to it. Nice. I'm getting really curious just watching this now. Gonna have to say. Now, are there other in your teams who do like two parts? Creative director is also the programmer. Do you have a salesperson who is also your company masseuse or something?
Yeah, exactly. We have our animator is kind of the best example. He's even more extreme than me. He's doing like the animations. He's doing level design. He's doing environment stuff. He's also doing quests and quest design. And he's also kind of the producer of the team as well. So he's doing a lot of planning and making sure that everyone is working on the right stuff. So he has his hands full.
So basically,
as well.
His job is giving himself homework.
Yeah, exactly. So he can.
Nice.
Yeah. But the other, like the 2D and 3D artists, they're more specialized in their roles. It's more doing different kinds of UI and concepts, but it's still like 2D art. Yeah.
Well, in this day and age, I'm going to change the subject into something. But I was at, the podcast we tape here is taped at a radio studio. And one of the radio hosts called me. And I did a radio interview with him just in the beginning of the quarantine. And he was like, so do you know how this affects the game developers? And I said, I pulled something out of my ass. And I just basically want you to validate if I'm true, or I got to call him up and say, we got to do it. But so everybody is hit with the quarantine, right?
Yeah.
But being game developers, I assume that you are used to working online based and that you are maybe more comfortable with, like, let's say, online meeting systems and your Discord channels and all of that than maybe other businesses who have to change their way of operating more.
Yeah, I would very much say so. I mean, we have been working from home before the quarantine now and then. I mean, not all the time, but we didn't really have an office when we started out, so we worked from home a lot.
Did you have the cliche basement? I feel like every good indie game needs
we did
a
have a cliche. We started working from home, but our first office was in a basement that
nice.
We shared. But it was, I have to be honest, it was a really, really nice basement. It was like a TV production team that kind of rented out their basement, so it's, and they used it for like filming stuff as well. So it was a really good basement.
You're ruining all of my fantasies of what it's like to be a game developer.
But there were rats and spider webs.
Yes,
and all
yes,
that, yeah.
Yes, yes. And gremlins and goblins, I'm sure.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So you seem like you're doing okay.
We're doing okay. I mean, it's a change of how to manage the team and how to communicate.
Not meeting, pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's weird not meeting each other face to face and like having small talk and you can't really poke someone about minor stuff in the same way and just like turn around and ask them how does this look? Does this look okay? Was this how you imagine it would be look or something like that?
Yeah,
everything is more like a process.
Yeah,
and
more heavy.
More. Yeah. So I feel, I mean, it's working, but I'm getting a little bit sick of this quarantine stuff.
I think most people are. But then again, like you're in a business that is, as far as I can tell, thriving in the quarantine.
Yeah.
The amount of hours people game as opposed to how many hours people spend gathered 100 plus people in comedy clubs.
Yeah, that's a lot tougher for you guys.
Yeah.
I mean, we're kind of, as you said, we're kind of thriving because they actually kind of recommend staying in like social. You can play games with your friends online. It's a way of being social at least. And they that's what they recommend you do now. So, I mean, yeah, it's good times for the game industry in that aspect, but I would rather have it the way it was.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So it all was. But it was really, really tough for you with the, like having not being able to do anything with other people, with an audience or anything.
It's hard. Well, it's going to be like a couple of weeks before this goes out, but I'm going to start streaming again.
Okay. Yeah.
And I did do some streaming and was a little bit scared away both by. Like, it's the same thing, because then, you know, I'd start a stream, and people would write in the chat, no sound, and I would just be, why is there no sound? But just, there was sound yesterday. I feel so unprofessional. when that happens, it just annoys me. And also, I know quite a few streamers, and I know like the amount of effort it takes to get a successful, like get a stream to grow. Like everybody can be a streamer and have three people watching, but if you actually want to like do it professionally and have some sort of income and have some sort of like community building, that just requires a lot of resources and a lot of presence.
Yeah.
That I
didn't it seems like a really, really hard work being a streamer. Like you have to, you can't take any kind of vacation or anything, because when you don't stream in your usual hours, you lose your audience so fast.
I'm gonna do it just to have something to do, because like I don't know when the theaters are gonna open, and there's a couple of festivals I usually do every year that are of course canceled this year. So like, and I mean, I'm sitting in here playing computer games anyway. Like I've just been fucking. Let's see, it is now it's the 17th.
Yeah,
today. This episode will be out in a couple of weeks, which means that I have now 18 days ago, speaking of early access game, I bought Mountain Blade 2, Bannerlord.
Yeah, I remember you talked about that when we talked.
And
last time.
I have so far cracked 80 hours in 18 days.
That's really good.
Yeah, I'm happy about
it. You should feel proud of yourself.
I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I'm just sitting here anyway, and I miss people and interaction, and I miss my fans. Like, fuck it, let's just do the thing, and then now I'm not going to care how many people show up.
Yeah.
And just see what happens. So when is Dreadland set to...
Yeah, we kind of want to. Our plan was to have it in early access for about 6 months or something like that. We haven't set like a hard release date because we really want to make sure we make the game we want to. And that's also kind of also being able to act on all the player feedback and what players enjoy and what players don't enjoy.
Yeah. A massive shout out from the board of this podcast to game developers who take their time to make their games finished.
Yeah, I think every game developer really, really wants to take. I mean, I could probably work for this game on this game for like 5 years more if I.
No, of course, there has to come a point where like we can't polish this anymore, right?
Yeah.
Sure, there has to come a point. When I write a comedy show, I want to keep rewriting it until it's fucking. But at some point, you need to like get it out there, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
But there's a difference between wanting to do as best as you can within the reach of your resources. There's a difference between doing that and then making Fallout 76.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's a difference between what other buggy games have I played recently. Like when you play, well, again, I usually use Firaxis, the XCOM producers, as the good example of this. That they deliberately delayed XCOM 2, and they knew that was going to take them past the Christmas season that they of course wanted, but they deliberately delayed it just because they knew the expectations of the players, and they wanted to meet them.
Yeah.
So big shout out to game developers who don't set a hard date.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really hard to, because you have so many moving parts, because it's usually it's not all about the development as well, because you have like a marketing, especially if you're a big company, you have a big marketing department that has their own agenda, and they have set date, and they have to work to that date, and they launch massive like advertising campaigns that cost a lot of money and all that kind of weird stuff. Not fun.
So I guess that's one of the few privileges of being a small developer.
Yeah, We're working, Fat Shark is our publisher, so we're working with their marketing department. So we still have some of those, like we have to, they really want a date as fast as possible when we can release it so they can start working towards it. But we're still at least deciding our own release dates and all that. I mean, I have had, like, when you have worked for other publishers in the past before, like I worked at Fat Shark before I started Black Fox Studios. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you work with publishers which kind of decide that this game has to be released at this date, and we won't back out of it. And that's really, really hard on the developer, because the developer is the bad guy in the eyes of the players. Why did you ship a buggy game? Why didn't you finish up this? But when you didn't really get an opportunity to do it. So that's really, really hard. Mm. But that, luckily for us, we're not in that situation right now. So.
Oh, it also seems that I get the idea from talking with Martin that the people at Fat Shark are kind of cool and laid back.
Yeah, very much. They're really, really good guys.
Very professional, of course. Doing a massive, what was that, 3 million?
It's crazy.
Registered players from Vermintide 2 now, which is just...
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah. I wish I liked Vermintide.
Mm.
I mean, I think it's an amazing game, but I don't think it's a game for me. Because I get fucking stressed.
I worked a lot on Vermintide 1 and a little bit on the second one as well. And I'm not really an FPS or FPS player.
Yeah, no,
you get stressed out, and I enjoy it for 10 minutes, and then I get so stressed out. So I have to play something else for a while. But it's a really, really good and challenging game.
Mm. And it's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. It's so really, really is.
So what it seems like you kind of get the best of both worlds then. You get to be indie, you get to be a small team can work with a common goal, but still you have the backup of the big boys.
Yeah, it's a really, really good situation for us. I mean, we're really small, nice and close developer group of people, but we still have the help from Fat Shark with the marketing stuff, because I have no clue how to do marketing. It's so far off my league, so it's ridiculous. And to have them help us with that's just awesome. And also having access to Fat Shark's knowledge when you kind of need something isn't working, or you need some game idea is not shaping up the way you hoped it would be, that you can talk to them if they have so much experience to get help. That's really, really good.
Really so nice. shout out to Fat Shark.
Yes, indeed. We love you.
Can we talk a little bit about the game developing business in Sweden in general? Because I know from the Danish game developers I've spoken to that the Danish scene is very it's quite small. It's very intimate in the way that kind of everybody knows everybody just from people go to the same conferences and the same game jams, and basically everybody's worked with everybody. And it's also, it feels like it's very artistically driven, which is also based on the fact that the Danish, what's it called? When you get funds, when the government helps you. Right? Yeah. I don't know. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Those money come in Denmark from the cultural pile. Right. Whereas in Finland, I know, and Sweden, I think those money comes from the industrial pile.
Yeah.
Which is way bigger. than the cultural one will ever be.
Yeah. I think we have a little bit of kind of both, but yeah, the industrial is probably a lot bigger.
Yeah, so that's like my prejudice. It's not a prejudice, but my idea without knowing about it, about the Swedish business, is that it's more, it's a, first of all, way bigger.
Yeah.
But it's also more integrated into the economy, economical.
Yeah, I think you don't get a lot of like money trying to start up like a game development company. It's really, really hard in Sweden. I would say you don't get a lot. But I think since Sweden and Stockholm has a lot of successful big companies like DICE, Avalanche, and a lot more Paradox and Fat Shark and such, I think it might be easier to get investors on board for startups. I think that could be a really big difference because they can see the success stories like right next doors.
Yeah.
So that I would imagine could be a big difference.
And of course, Sweden is just a bigger country, both square feet and number of people.
Yeah.
So I assume it wouldn't be as easy to have that very tight, everybody knows everybody kind of
eye. No, yeah, we kind of have it in Stockholm. I think almost all the like game developer companies is located in the same area in the south of Stockholm.
So we kind of, that's interesting.
Like Fat Shark and Paradox is they're like 20 meters from each other. And before we had Rovio in our like the basement or the lower levels of the same building as Fat Shark. And we had Mojang just a couple of hundred meters away, and DICE and Avalanche is also like 500 meters away from Fat Shark. So it's a really centered around one area in Stockholm. So I think they're bigger companies like DICE. I don't know, there may be 500,000 people now, but
so
it's impossible to know everyone. But I think you know a lot of people.
Well, I did a little bit many years ago when I wasn't a skilled enough comedian to get spots in Denmark. I traveled quite a bit. The idea I got from the Swedish, I did a little gigging in Sweden.
Uh-huh.
I did the Lund Comedy Festival. I did some open mics in Malmö. The idea I get about the Swedish comedy scene is that it's like there's one comedy scene in Malmö.
Mm.
There's one in Stockholm, and there's one in somewhere north. But they're like. They seemed like closed systems.
Right. Hard to get into.
Well, I got this idea from speaking with the Swedish comedians that the people from Lund very rarely went to Stockholm to gig.
Right.
And if you have 15 comedy clubs in Lund, I don't know how many comedy clubs there is in Lund, but if you have 15 comedy clubs and like, you can get a spot right next door, there's not a lot of reason to go out of your way.
Yeah, leave your comfort zone.
But that's interesting with the game developing. So that's kind of mostly Stockholm-centered?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they have the big Massive in Malmö. That's the only one on top of my head that's really, really one of the bigger companies. Other than that, I think the big ones are in Stockholm. Then there's a lot of small ones that, around everywhere, of course. And think like we have a city called Skövde, which has
what's it called?
Skövde.
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 They have
Skövde.
Skövde.
They were one of the first had like a education for game developing. One of the first in Sweden. So they have built up like a cluster of really good small companies. I know like the Coffee Stain Studios are from Skövde, the ones who did the, what's it called, goat thingy. I don't remember the name.
The goat simulator?
Goat simulator, thank you.
Fuck, that's one of the weirdest stories.
Yes, it is. Actually, but, yeah.
I'm gonna say this afterwards. Well, if you could put me in touch with those guys, I'd love to interview them about Code Simulator.
Yeah, I'll see if I know someone who knows them.
That's a fucking funny story.
Yeah, I read somewhere they just roll with it. They did something and they caught on, and then just roll with it.
That makes a lot of sense. But back to Dreadlands, the thing at hand. We're not done, but we have spoken for almost an hour now. You know your game way better than I do. Is there anything we haven't discussed? Can we talk about the soundtrack?
Yes, of course.
Is there anything to say?
We're using a little bit of music from an old game called Krater, which Fat Chuck did before, which was made by a Swedish artist called Christian Gabel, which is part of the Bob Hund, which is a kind of big band in Sweden.
Oh, Bob Hund. That's been a long time since I've...
Yeah, so he was... I think he's the drummer of Bob Hund. So he did like a solo project and for that game. So we used some of that music. And we also have a very talented musician called André Linder, which is doing some new music for the game as well.
Nice.
Also really good.
Is there anything else we need to, or we should?
So the thing we're working on right now is adding the co-op to the game. And that's one of the more requested features. And I think that's going to really open up like the online part of the game. And I think that's going to be really awesome to be able to play together with a friend.
And this was the idea right from the get-go, right?
Yeah, so we designed it's we have always had like the online component from the start, because I think being a programmer, and I had done a lot of like for Vermintide and other games, a lot of network programming. So I know if you don't do it from the start, like in the core of the game, it's going to be really hard to make a good implementation afterwards, like add on co-op after. It's hard to make it good. So we have, you can actually play co-op now in our like development branches, and PvP you can play in the early access release, but only for fun, as I said before. So we've always had the online component from the start. So we just need to make a really good implementation on how every system around the co-op is supposed to work, to make it a really fun experience for the players, and also having something really worthwhile to do together, not just doing, it's fun to just do like combat missions together, but we really want to have something more than that to offer.
So you can do combat missions now together?
No, you can do combat missions against each other, but you can't. We haven't actually like switched the button to allow players to do co-op yet, because we want to go out with that, like have every system in place when we set it live. So
yeah. So how far off is that? If say, and this is a very hypothetical example, say a dude in Denmark who really liked XCOM and has been hungering for a game like it, has his best friend who also really likes XCOM, and they would very much like to do that together. So when can they do that, hypothetically?
Yeah, we're working on it. It's really hard to nail down a date or something like that. But
I gotta get my grubby hands on this thing. It looks amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's more like 1 to 2 months away, something like that. It's not that far away. But we really want to make sure we do it the right way and make it a good experience for everyone.
Oh, that's so cool. And I guess that could be a bombshell to end on.
Yeah.
You guys really wanted to do it the right way and make it a good experience for everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you. When we, there's so many... I know you have the you're privileged enough in your indiness that you have more control of it over the than the big some of the big AAAs, but still you see game developers like EA just blatantly disregard everything the player base wants just for the sake of profit. Yeah. So every time, like, just not being EA is enough to give you a gold star in my book. But I do feel, as a gamer, I do feel the difference whether or not I feel, what can you say? I feel seen, like I feel valued by the companies. Like when I first tried Hearthstone, I had a gig in the other side of the country, and I was like, okay, I got this train ride. I'm going to try this Hearthstone thing. I played a lot of Magic cards. Let's see what happens, right? And so I, the first, I click in, and I win three matches, like 20-0, 18-0, 19-0. And then the first thing pops up that says, would you like to spend money on this? I'm like, nah, I don't think so. And then I lose three matches, 20-0, 19-0, 18-0. I'm like, you got to be shitting me. You just told me that I'm not supposed to play your game if I don't spend money on it. So, of course, I'm going to spend money on your game, but that means I'm going to... Is there microtransactions in your game?
No, we don't
have anything. See, there we go. I don't mind buying a game as long as I buy the game that I don't, you know. Let's say I buy a game about Star Wars and I'm not allowed to play Darth Vader until I spend another fucking thousand.
I really don't like that kind of...
That whole FIFA shit show they've got going on right now.
Yeah.
Is just...
But I mean, it's working for them, obviously. So they're gonna keep doing it. I mean, we as players have to stop buying those loot boxes and stuff.
Yeah,
that's the only way they're not gonna do it anymore, I think, because they make so much money on those.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, but didn't they lose a fuck ton of stock value after the whole
For the
Star Wars thing.
Yeah, that's true. They took it too far. So I guess lesson learned.
Yeah. Somewhat. Well, I'm glad there is a too far, even for gamers.
Yeah.
And I am truly, truly glad Peter Nielsen from the company behind... What's the name of the company? I'm just calling you the Dreadlands company. So
Black Fox Studios is the name.
Black Fox Studios. I'm gonna
write that down. Yeah.
Thank you so, so much for... being patient with me and taking the time out of your very, very busy schedule to chat with me once again. If people want to try Dreadlands, Steam?
Yeah, it's on Steam, Early Access. It's I think it's 1670 something euros. So it's very affordable. You get a lot of content for that. I mean, we have almost 50 hours playthrough time or something like that. If you want to play this, like the story only.
Well, here's a giant shout out to Black Fox Studios and their new game Dreadlands, which is already available on Steam Early Access. If you want to join in and feel like a Fallout-y inspired XCOM online Mordheim-ish.
Yes, perfect. Dick perfect description. I think I said it better to myself.
Co-op PvP gaming experience.
Yeah. We should put that on our Steam page.
Yeah. Well, you can quote me on that. I've already fucked you up. You get that one for free. thank you so much for spending the time, Peter Nielsen. Thank you so much for listening, dear listener. Please do smash that like button on the Facebooks. It is the easiest way to give us... Det nemmeste måde at give os ris og ro på, ikke også? Ros på. Jeg kan ikke engang snakke dansk nu. Og at komme i kontakt med mig, hvis du har nogle gode idéer, eller noget, du rigtig, rigtig gerne vil høre om. Tusind ekstra tak til de vidunderlige mennesker, der støtter os ind på tier.dk. Det betyder så meget for mig, især i den her tid. Så tusind tak for det. Fortæl dine venner om det hele, så vi kan få overtalt verdensherredømmet og tage allervigtigst at være med en gang til, når vi næste gang er aldrig AFK.
Trænger til briller, nogen har gavn af en fysioterapeut, og andre kunne have glæde af en diætist. Er du medlem af Sygeforsikringen Danmark, så har vi din ryg med tilskud til en lang række behandlinger. Også til tandlæge, vaccinationer, privatjordmor, receptpligtig medicin, psykolog og meget mere. Meld dig ind, mens du er rask på sygeforsikring.dk.